Hello and welcome to this Innovation Forum podcast. At our recent Sustainable Landscapes and Commodities Conference, held online in November, Innovation Forum's Toby Webb was joined by Emily Coonan, Global Responsible Sourcing Leader, Palm Oil and Seafood with Nestle, Marianne Martinet, Programmes Director and Project Manager at Earthworm Foundation, and Sandra Doig, Head of Sustainability at Grupa Palmas. They discussed how they are collaborating to build a resilient production landscape in Peru.
Marianne, why don't you start us off?
I'm Marianne, Director of Programme at Earthworm Foundation. Just for introducing a little bit, Earthworm Foundation, we are a non-profit organisation based in 16 countries, mainly producing countries, and we have about 230 staff. And our mission at Earthworm is really to regenerate nature, improve people's lives, but really by leveraging global supply chain. And we do that working with businesses, members, clients, and also having a strong presence in the field. So, well, business collaboration. Well, let's start probably with the business commitment. We should recognize that progress has been made on responsible sourcing in community supply chain. For the last 20 years of experience at EF, we have really seen that the main way to achieve long-term impact in supply chain is really working through a bottom-up approach, working with the producer and the rural communities producing raw material. But we have also realized that we will not be able to solve critical issues only within one single supply chain or working in silo. So if we aim to stop deforestation led by smallholders only addressing the palm oil supply chain, we will probably see in the same landscape deforestation led by cocoa or rubber. So we strongly need collective action in key sourcing regions to find practical solutions and to achieve impact. I've been asked to deep dive into one concrete example where we have learned a lot and we are still learning. It's Tocache. So Tocache is a beautiful valley in the Peruvian Amazon where we can find really critically important conservation areas, mainly forest, but it's also one of the main sourcing areas for palm and cocoa in the countries. We count approximately 25,000 cocoa farmers and more or less 1,200 palm farmers. There are also 3 palm oil mills and 1,000 of cooperatives. The biggest palm oil actor in the region is Grupo Palmas, part of the Nestle supply chain. And in that context, since 2018, we have been working with Grupo Palmas and Nestle and other actors. And our entry point was really the smallholder resilience, targeting farmers within the Grupo Palmas supply chain. But quickly, after a few years of work, we have identified that having a holistic approach was needed, and also embarking other supply chain connected to the same farmers in Tocache. If not, we will have never achieved our goal. And indeed, the goal of Tocache is really to create a sustainable landscape where we have resilient farmers producing cocoa, palm, other crops, while they are protecting the forest. So to be a little bit more concrete, our approach is based on 3 key pillars that together with partners we have implemented. And by partners, of course, I already mentioned Grupo Palmas and Nestle, but I'm mainly talking about local partners. We have one, which is La Sociedad Peruana de Ecodesarrollo, and we have also some other local partners. But we managed to achieve some significant outcome linked to these 3 pillars of our approach. And let me go a little bit in detail. The first big pillar is really, as I say now a few times, is really engaging with farmers and engaging, improving their resilience. And how we do that? We work on income diversification, on also having a holistic view of the farm management. Let's not focus only on the cocoa plot, but let's focus on the palm plot. Let's focus on the farm. On the farm, you have forest, you have river, you have different kind of crops. So it's really managing holistically the farm with the farmers. With this objective of the first pillar, really focused on value creation for farmers. The second pillar of our approach is really, okay, where is the forest? How much forest do we have to conserve in this landscape? And we have been using a pilot at the landscape level of HCV approach, and we have identified 60 to 500,000 hectares to be conserved. So this is the second pillar. And the third pillar of our approach is really the stakeholder engagement. We can't achieve all by ourselves, and we really need to have a strong stakeholder engagement locally to make sure that the forests that we have identified are part of the local land use planning. So to doing so, we have collaborated with civil society, more than 14 NGOs, but mainly with local and regional government. So based on this approach, we are aiming to have really holistic impact, and we are aiming over a few years to reach 3,000 farmers' families, but also to protect 100% of the forest we have identified, and to embark 12 companies and cooperatives to adopt NDP, no deforestation, no peat and no exploitation commitment, and to implement the commitment. But I would say with this big ambition, there is really an opportunity to recognize and to value the engagement of all the actors, the different here, Nestlé, Grupo Palmas, but the other actors. But one of the biggest questions we are still trying to figure out today is how we recognize this individual effort. When it's about collective action that allows the success of this project, how we attribute impact to one of the partners is really a key challenge today. So I would like to maybe to conclude this very short introduction. It's hard to explain the entire project in a short period of time, but one key learning of this project, and it's not a surprise, but is only when people see the value of the nature, when they have secured their livelihood, and when also it's really focused on value creation at their level, that we can really succeed in implementing sustainable practices. I mean, conserving the forest and improving working condition. And what I mean concretely is that really finding incentive for encouraging individual effort. As an example that we have put in place in other locations and we are exploring now in Peru is really using the concept of conservation production agreement with farmers. And what I mean is that farmers are receiving capacity building, information, access to input, benefit that allow them to increase their productivity on their farm and ultimately to increase their income. And in exchange, we want them to commit to conserve the forest. So it's kind of the engagement both sides. These kind of agreements are only possible when it's linked to multi-crops, all the crops on the farm, at the farmer level. If not, I mean, the agreement can be broken. So that's why, again, even when we are talking about conservation production at the farmer level, companies can't look at their own supply chain in silo approach. So definitely collective action and businesses collaboration are key to achieve impact in key sourcing region with farmers.
Thank you, Marianne. Just summarize for us in case people have forgotten, because there was a lot there. The number of farmers, the number of hectares and the key crops that they're growing.
The landscape, the key crops, it's palm and cocoa. The number of hectares we have identified as to be conserved, it's 62,500. It's more or less 40% of the total landscape. We are aiming to reach 3,000 farmers' family.
Great. Thank you. Very helpful. Emily, really interested to hear Nestlé's perspective on being involved in this and how it fits in with what else you're doing.
You're probably familiar with Nestlé. Nestlé is the world's largest food and beverage company. We have a presence in 187 countries and more than 2,000 brands, which ranges from coffee brands like Nescafe and Nespresso to confectionery like Kit Kat. So what all of this means is that we have really a wide range of ingredients that we're sourcing, coming from many different sourcing origins, going to many different destinations. And it's really important to us that we are sourcing those ingredients sustainably. Our commitment to sustainability, we can really trace back to our 2010 NDPE commitment, no deforestation, no peat, no exploitation. And at that point, when we made that commitment, we didn't really know how do we go about achieving it. And so we've been going on this journey ever since towards fulfilling that commitment. The first challenge that we encountered was knowing where did these ingredients come from. So traceability, supply chain mapping, because without knowing where those origins are, we couldn't tell what are the sustainability challenges and what do we need to do to overcome them. So we've made a lot of progress in that space. Our palm oil supply chain, for example, is well over 90% traceable to mill, over 60% traceable to plantation. But now knowing where the ingredients come from, the next challenge was how do we really address the key issues? How do we address deforestation? How do we address human rights issues? What's evolved in our efforts to tackle these issues is now what we call a toolkit approach. And this means that we're really recognizing that there's not one tool on its own that's going to be able to deliver on everything we need to achieve sustainability. So we have to bring the right tools together. We use assessments, auditing, certifications, on-the-ground engagement, such as smallholder programs, remote monitoring, like through satellites, and so on. We've really evolved and developed these tools, and I think a lot of the industry has been doing the same in this 10-year period. And while we have made a lot of progress that I think is worth recognizing. We're also seeing that there's been a tendency for us in the industry to operate in silos around specific issues. So we'll do discrete projects to tackle one challenge with one partner, one work plan, and we may be doing another project in the same area, but they're not really collaborating on the ground. This is where we're seeing that best case scenario, we're missing opportunities for greater impact, but in other situations, we're actually undermining the efforts of initiatives by not bringing them together. I think a really common case that we see where this happens is the topics that Marianne brought up of trying to address smallholder livelihoods and inclusion in our supply chains and to address deforestation. So we realize where sustainability standards are high, especially when we're asking for really clear evidences to verify no deforestation, the unintended consequence can be excluding smallholders from the supply chain, whereas in another initiative, we're trying to be more inclusive. This is why we've been getting more and more into landscape initiatives, or at least taking some of these discrete projects and forming them into more holistic landscape-like initiatives. And that's what brings us to this topic. And why is it that we invested in Tocache and why are we focused on this region? This is an important production base for our palm oil supply chains. And when we assessed what are the challenges we face there, like I described, we found that, okay, we need to address the smallholder inclusion, smallholder livelihoods and resiliency. We need to address deforestation and forest conservation. And so we ended up with two different initiatives that we were invested in. They were really strong programs, but we saw the need to bring them together. And we realized that we'll only be successful in this region if we can address both topics, because it's really that the economic challenges smallholders are facing are linked to the drivers of deforestation in the region. And at the same time, protecting the forests without addressing livelihoods would make smallholders more vulnerable. So you can see really clearly why these things need to come together. Marianne and Sandra will tell you more of the details of the project itself. So I'll just share with you what I think we've learned from this and what challenges we're still facing. So three key learnings. One is that this type of partnership is really critical for a brand like us downstream to be able to contribute positively. So partnership with a supplier who's on the ground, partnership with an implementing partner who's on the ground and can inform those local connections. The second topic is that these are not light touch projects. You can't just put in a few thousand here and there. It's really about deep engagement. And then the third is when we reflect back at our overall strategy, we're seeing that we need to do these types of initiatives in so many different landscapes. Many of those landscapes where they're most needed are actually the ones where sustainability initiatives, there aren't really any activities that are happening now. Given the critical role of local partners, one of the questions or the challenges we're really focused on now is how do downstream companies incorporate inclusion of and incentives for these local partners that need to be involved and make that part of our standard business practice? And then the second point is, given the level of involvement that's required, but also the many different landscapes that our ingredients come from, how do we go about scaling up the strategy?
Thank you. One quick question, Emily, before I hand over to Sandra. Is your commitment to a project like this time-bound in any way?
No, I mean, we fund it on a few year basis, but it's not that, okay, at this point, it stops.
Okay, thank you. Sandra, for those of us who don't know Grupo Palmas, long been a palm oil sustainability leader, particularly in Latin America, but just tell us a bit about Grupo Palmas and then the rest of the story, please.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, all of you, to give Grupo Palmas the chance to share with you our experience in this important forum. I'm going to focus my presentation in three main points: who we are and why we worked and developed an HCB landscape assessment with EF and Nestlé. And I think importantly, how we are using this information, this process to take decisions. Firstly, who we are. Grupo Palmas is an integrated company. We are the biggest palm oil producer in Peru. We have two plantations with 26,000 hectares of palm and 1,200 hectares of cocoa. Also, we protect 5,000 hectares of forest or HCB areas. Also, we have a refinery. In 2019, we refine 150 tons of crude palm oil and palm kernel for our B2B and B2C businesses. We are supplier of the biggest food company in the industry. We are RSPO member, we are EF member, and we expect to certify RSPO the next year. But more importantly, we are in the Peruvian Amazon, one of the most biological, diverse ecosystem on Earth. And due to that, we have the responsibility and the duty to ensure that our supply chain operates sustainably. So why did Grupo Palmas develop HCBL land assessment? Because it's crucial for our business. It's not just a study. It's crucial for the business we are. And I will explain why. Grupo Palmas has a business strategy based on four pillars. Two of them are linked with the study. The first one is to develop a responsible sourcing to increase our smallholder supply base. Currently, 13% of palm oil fruit we process comes from independent smallholders. This means 90,000 tons of palm oil comes from 400 smallholders and almost 6,000 hectares of palm. Our goal in 2025 is to increase this volume by 30%. This means an extra 120,000 tons of palm a year. So how do we achieve this with our second pillar, which is to have sustainability as a competitive advantage and to move away from competitors precisely by having higher standards. This means that for us, our suppliers must fulfill our sustainability policy, but or in the market we call NDPE policy, as we don't want to be definitely driver for deforestation. And we want our clients to be confident in our supply chain and also that no palm oil comes from deforestation. This landscape assessment helped us to put this strategy in practice, doing two things. First, improving our traceability system. And second, to help us know where it's feasible to seed palm in a responsible way. Related with the traceability system, before the study, we already knew where the palm oil come from. We know the owner of the plantation. We know how many hectares he or she has. We know their productivity, geolocation of the plot, and which other crops they have. So we have a lot of information about them, which is a lot in the market for palm oil. However, we didn't know if they have forest and where they have it. And that is crucial because if we don't know that, we don't know if there is any risk for clearance. So the assessment allows to know which smallholders has forest in their plots. And from that information in mind, to develop a different strategy from them to implement some specific actions to protect the forest. So for instance, we help them to have specific plans to protect these areas. They already know they have it, and they already know they have to protect those areas. Now, the next step is to monitor the forest using satellite platforms. In Peru, there is one super platform called Geobosques that give us information about deforestation and alerts in real time. So the idea is to pass the information to the platform and monitor these areas. That's the idea related with traceability system, but how help us to define areas? Finally, what the study make us help us is to know where it is feasible to seed palm far away from forest areas. Once we know where is forest, also we know where is not forest. So that is a crucial information also that help us to plan an expansion with smallholders and safe expansion. For instance, in the area of Tocache supply chain, there are approximately 11,000 hectares for planting sustainable palm, which is a lot, which is enough for us. Indeed, just a few months ago, 120 smallholders plant palm in 400 hectares. But before they do that, we check if they have forest, if they have HCB and HCS areas. visited their plots and gave them technical assistance to ensure that they were not clearing these areas. To sum up, the assessment is really critical for a business strategy for palm oil. It's a useful tool to take decisions. And for us, it's mainly that. It's a decision-making tool. Which learnings I have from this process? Many, a lot. The importance of work together, EF and Nestlé's, it's a key learning. But something I really have is a huge question about this process. And it's related with who is going to pay for conservation. And a smallholder that has, for instance, 20 hectares, and from that, 7 hectares of palm, 3 hectares of other crops, and 10 hectares of forest, is going to have a really difficult decision to protect in that forest. Because for them, that land is income, is improve their life. We think that the next discussion in the field with our supply chain is going to be that.
Thank you, Sandra. On that last point, it's so important. What do you see as the potential solution there? I mean, you know, we do hear with a lot of smallholders, particularly on 2, 3, 4 hectares, that yield increases alone are not enough. I don't know if that's the same in Peru, but I've certainly heard that in other parts of the world. What do you think that the solution is to that very difficult problem of the financial side that you just outlined?
We need to find incentives. Now we think, I mean, how we understand this issue, if we reduce costs for independent growers and also increase their productivity, they're going to have the incentives to protect these areas. But that is a challenge.
And I assume that has to be done across other crops beyond just palm oil.
It depends how productive is the other crops. It depends. For instance, we have smallholders that have 100% of their land with palm oil, and they are really good. They have other investment. They have their children in the school and university. They have changed their lives. So I don't know if they have to combine crops. Maybe it depends. It depends the crops. It depends the business.
And what's the average farm size for the smallholders you're dealing with?
10 hectares on average. And their productivity is going from between 15 to 30 tons, so which is a lot of dispersion, you know. So there you can work. Usually, a productive farm must have like 20, 22 at least tons per hectare, no? So you can work with them, with their land, with technical assistance to increase their productivity at least to 25 tons per hectare.
Okay, thank you. A question for Emily. You're obviously trying to scale your approaches to landscape projects. And of course, success breeds success and confidence and the willingness of the company to invest. What does success look like here? Do you have to go to one of your board directors who doesn't know the detail and he or she says, Emily, you know, what define success for me here so we can invest more? What would you say?
I think at that level, being able to just provide the assurances, this landscape is okay to source from. We know that we're confident that there won't be deforestation associated with the ingredients. We're confident that the people who are producing the palm oil have sustainable livelihoods. That would be the ultimate success.
Yeah, we had a session yesterday on defining the business case and success factors for landscapes. And those two points were exactly what a whole group of brainstormers came up with as the key components of the business case. Supply risk, social reputational risk, social risk management as key factors. Very interesting. Marianne, you're involved here as a kind of broker in a way, in a complex landscape. How do you make sure everybody feels appreciated?
It's a good question, because when you ask me which impact we aim to have and over the 62,500 hectares we want to protect, how many can go to Nestle reporting, how many can go to Grupo Palmas? The question is really who can claim which impact and which success. I know that there is other people talking about linking the impact to the amount of funding we put in the landscape. So bigger you pay, more you can claim. There is other view of bigger you buy from this region. I mean, if you buy from a key sourcing region, a huge volume, you can claim a bigger impact. There are some different ways to go about it. The ideal scenario is that we all recognize this collective action, meaning each partner can claim all the impact, all the success, but collectively. regardless of volume, regardless of the funding. No one should be able to claim any individual impact, but it's a little bit idealistic. So it's really a question I would like to hear other people as well, what they think. It's really something where we need to have progress, yeah, on this collective action. Can it be so simple to say that it's collective action, so let's claim collectively all this success? It would be good to hear what the other, even Emily and Sandra, but the other on this panel can think about it.